Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. Welcome to What the Hal, and welcome to Southern California. And if you know nothing about Southern California, I bet you know one thing. We have a lot of traffic, and it's not fun. You know, there are times when you're just stuck on these freeways, and you're wondering, where's all that tax money going to try to make things better? Well, there are answers. And so we brought in some of the heaviest hitters here in Southern California to talk about transportation public policy, and so here we go. All right, so let's have all of you introduce yourselves.
Camille Cruz, I'm a commuter.
Philip Washington, CEO of LA Metro.
Darren Chitsey, COO of Southern California Association of Governments.
And Stephanie Wiggins, CEO of Metrolink.
You know, CEO, COO, I want to say I'm Hal Eisner, LOL. All these initials, you know.
Yeah,
but, to get these sort of folks in one room is significant. These are the heads of our agencies here in Southern California that deal with transportation. Transportation policy is a huge part of our lives. And so I'm so grateful to have all of you here. And that does – each agency has its own responsibility. So why don't we start with that? And let's start with Stephanie talking about Metrolink, and then we'll go to around the table, basically. Go ahead.
So Metrolink is the regional train service in Southern California. 60% of our riders are traveling from one county to another county. So we travel longer distances, on average about 40 miles, one-way trip.
And that's you've got the big trains.
That's right.
Double-decker trains.
That's correct.
Fantastic views, too, when you're riding these tracks. Go ahead.
Darren Chitsey, the Southern California Association of Governments is what's called a metropolitan planning organization. And so our job is to coordinate the future of what transportation looks like, what housing and land use looks like, and employment projections going out in a 20-year horizon.
Now we're talking about five counties?
Six counties. From the north end to Ventura, the south end to Imperial County, including Orange, Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Bernardino.
What about San Diego County?
San Diego has its own entity.
I didn't realize that Imperial County was part of this as well.
They are.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
So you're kind of coordinating all of this stuff with people who are like Philip and Stephanie, who are dealing with agencies. And so Metro is sort of that famous agency that has to deal with all of our trains and subways and buses. And mm-hmm. Go ahead, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, LA Metro, trains, buses, but also highway improvement, responsible for funding that as well.
Anybody remember Carmageddon?
Yes, we do. Huge agency, third largest in the country. In addition to our mobility responsibilities, we also have responsibility for goods movement, reducing congestion, and also the idea of having a very, very large capital infrastructure program where we're building right now almost $20 billion in projects that we have in terms of overseeing the build out of that.
Let me give a shout out to Chicago because I want to tell you guys we're breathing down your neck, right?
Yes, and I'm from Chicago, so there you go.
But when I say that, it's true. We're creeping up with our transit system into being something close to theirs.
We really are. Chicago moves about 1.7 million people a day. We're at about 1.2, 1.3, but with our build out, we'll gain on them, the other rail lines and bus lines that we're building.
Now, just so everybody knows, we're going to get to Camille in a few minutes. But I really want to understand what's on your table right now. What are you working on? What are the things that are going to make our lives better? Because there are a lot of skeptical people out on the roads, and you know that as well as I do, right?
Yeah.
They want to see action. They want to see it yesterday. And then when they get up in the morning and they're stuck on the freeway, it's like, yeah, but I spent all that money on measure this and measure that. And, you know, where's my money going? Where's my tax dollars? You know, so go ahead and kind of fill us in.
Well, absolutely. We're doing quite a bit. I think in addition to the mobility responsibilities that we have, we need to enhance the customer experience out there every day. And so when we talk about 1.2 million people riding our system, with 70% of those riders on the bus side, we have to make sure that we have easy use and we make this a very, very good experience. And so The first thing is the day-to-day service that we do. The next thing is building out all the infrastructure where the public has entrusted us to build, and that is not easy either.
No, it's not. I mean, I've been here long enough that I remember the very beginnings of all of this. Now, the very beginnings of this really goes way before me, because you had streetcars and probably horses and carriages before that. But you know, we in the 80s built the first subway. It was the Red Line after we put together the Blue Line, which went down to Long Beach, right?
Right.
And so the idea was to begin, like, building blocks to put together some kind of an infrastructure. And that's where SCAD kind of came in, right?
Right.
And what did you do?
So, you know, our organization's been around about 50 years now. And one of the things that certainly was recognized in the 70s was that the infrastructure that existed previously was very successful. The general idea of land use patterns and how Southern California has grown hasn't really changed. Those city center, those neighborhoods is very similar to the layout that we saw 70, 80 years ago. But at that time, we had a red line system that connected all of those centers to make transportation very efficient. So about that time is when leaders on our board and leaders at the city of LA and started to think, you know, how can we do things differently and put some studies together, put some ideas, and really translate it into what is today Metrolink. So the idea that things are – you have to take the long run look. You have to look 20, 30 years out. Isn't a new idea, and that's really what our job is to do, is to not just think about today, but to think decades down the row about what do our customers at that point going to look like, what are they going to want, and have to make some of the best guesses to really put the innovative ideas on the table to change what the future has done.
One of the things I think is really interesting about transportation planning is it's kind of handed off from one generation to the next. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're the next generation from people who had it before you.
Yeah.
And they were the next generation from people who had it before them. And so it's not like starting all over again, but it is kind of finding your lane, to use a bit of a metaphor. And so it takes, I'm sure, a little bit of time to pull that off. However, one of the things about Los Angeles, and I, you know what, if you're driving in your car right now and you're listening to this podcast – and you're stuck on the freeway, please don't say bad things about us. Because we're really trying to explore this. These folks are in the business of trying to make it better. The problem with Los Angeles is it's so big. Yeah. It's spread out. Mm-hmm. So unlike, say, Manhattan in New York or D.C. or some of these places, Boston, for instance, they're more compact.
Yeah, density.
Because of the density, you know, you get on the train, you go a mile and you're at your house, and you're going 10 blocks or whatever to get there. We can't really do that here very well. Right. It's a little harder. And so you have to live in a place where you've got a train station, and then on the other side of where that train's – where you end up is where you work, and then you've got the perfect scenario. Now, that's where Camille comes in. And I just want you to share this experience you had. We met a few days ago, and I was out trying to get some comments from commuters about, you know, traffic and what are you doing to try to make it all better and that kind of thing. And it turned out Camille told me the story that she was from New York, that she had only been here about a year. She used to use public transit all the time, but she hasn't used it one day at all until this past Monday, when she took up my challenge. She went to the North Hollywood station and she took the train to work. And tell me a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
It was a pleasurable experience. My normal commute, I live in North Hollywood and my job is in West Los Angeles. So my normal commute down the 405 is about an hour rolling through the traffic. And we all know that normally it's probably only 20 minutes away, but with the traffic going to work, it's about an hour. And then when I looked up the commute by public transit, it was an hour and 15 minutes. So it was really not that big of a difference. It was definitely doable and something that I was like, all right, I'll accept it.
You hadn't taken it before because?
Because this is a new city, I wasn't really familiar with it. It's not very broadcasted. This is not like encouraging us to take the train. I live in North Hollywood, and there's a nice train station there. And I could tell when I first found it, I could see that they're building a lot of stuff around it to make it mm-hmm. a mecca of North Hollywood, to make it a really big hub. But I think if I knew more about it, if it was more publicized and even more like signs or I don't know, like I had a few ideas on ways to make people do it,
what
encourage. Okay, so like what if we worked with...
Take notes, guys.
With yes. rideshare companies and encouraged a discounted rate to and from the train station in that area or within like a certain mileage. If you're traveling between the hours of 9 and 10 right now, there's a discount on Uber or Lyft or whatever. So that would encourage, I think, also the use of social media. A lot of like Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook, a lot of ads run through there. And, I mean, I've been in the room with you guys for, what, an hour, and I've probably had my phone in my hand for most of the time. So if you guys... get some ads on there, that'd be cool too. And just encouraging people to take this as an option, especially I'm the millennial. A lot of us and people that are new to this area, we don't have cars when we first get out here. So ride share and public transportation is huge. So I think that's like a good market to tap into. People from out of town and people that are young people.
Now, I wanna pick up on that. Because she said something that I think is interesting. You guys have advertised and marketed for decades. Mm-hmm. How does that feel to hear her say, if you guys just let us know more, like you're not? Well, what's the reaction to that?
Well, I think one of the reactions is we have to do better to reach various demographics. We use social media right now. We are starting with digital displays all over town, especially around stations. So we have to do better to reach out to every demographic. And that includes senior citizens as well, reaching out to them. And we're starting to do that right now. But I do want to pick up, if I could, on what Camille talked about with regard to density and land use around our stations especially. I mean, this is something that historically transportation agencies didn't really do. They said, you know, we are just the T in transit-oriented development. We just stick to transit. We are moving away from that. We are looking at land use. We are looking at creating our own density around our stations. And while we do not control everything around the stations, we recognize that we can instigate, we can impact, we can influence even other entities to build around our station to make it more vibrant and to create that density, because we know if you live around a station, you're probably more apt to use transit. And so that is very, very big now for us in L.A.
Right. You've got these multi-purpose or multi-use structures where you have grocery stores,
yes,
condos or apartments, and then you have the train station.
Right.
And that seems to be the sort of the trend, as you pointed out. Well, what do you think, Stephanie, about marketing? I mean, it's not like you don't, but well, it may not be falling on the right ears.
Right. So I think Camille raises great points, and we have to be more creative and dynamic with our marketing efforts. And in fact, one of Camille's suggestions is one of the things that Metro and Metrolink kind of are piloting right now. Metro has an actual pilot with a Lyft type service called Via, where you're getting a discount at the North Hollywood Red Line station that actually allows you to take that, we call it mobility on demand service.
And wait, this is a service that you're providing?
So Metro is paying for the service.
Okay. Right.
They've hired this firm, Via.
Via.
And they are focused, they're piloting it at the North Hollywood station and the nearby Burbank Metrolink station.
You just taught me something, because
yes,
I didn't even know that was
it
going on.
It just started a couple months ago, right, Phil?
Yeah, just a couple of months
How's
ago.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. We still don't have enough data to evaluate it, but that plus something called microtransit,
yes,
that we are piloting as well. Now, this microtransit says that we will use smaller vehicles, van-like vehicles, and use those for curb-to-curb Uber-like service to take folks to our stations. So this addresses that first last mile. You get off at this stop, whether it's a bus stop or a train stop, and you got a half a mile to go, maybe a mile to go. This micro transit will actually take you there.
That's really interesting, because one of the things that I've learned is that Uber and Lyft and these sort of rideshare operations has cut into the transportation system to where MetroLink hasn't really been affected as much, maybe because you do more long haul.
Exactly.
But Metro has been affected. You've seen a drop in ridership, and I guess some of those folks are going to Lyft and Uber. So by creating your own Lyft and Uber under another name, you're kind of taking that area.
Well, I mean, you know, that's one of the things. But I would submit to you that that is not the primary reason why we're losing ridership. The primary reason is car ownership. When you look out over, and this is based on a UCLA study, when you look out over the last 10, 15 years or so, 2.5 million more people have come to Southern California.
You mean like Camille?
Yes, she's from New York. Right?
We're glad to have you, by the way. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, 2.5 million more people have come here. And during that same period, the increase in automobile purchases is 2.1. That's almost one vehicle per person. And so that is the primary reason. And you can tie in affordable and attainable housing to that. Because as you know, as housing becomes more and more expensive, people have to move further and further out of the urban core, which almost necessitates them having a vehicle. So all of this, all of these things come into play when you talk about the decline in ridership.
So it's interesting because, you know, we have, for anybody that might be listening in another part of the country or another part of the world, because podcasts are everywhere, right? We have this car culture thing in California, where, you know, it's all about, you know, the Beach Boys and little old lady from Pasadena and her little old automobile, whatever. I mean, we've always been about cars, cool cars, neat cars. And, you know, you go up and down that freeway, any freeway in this town, just look at how many cars have one person.
Right.
People don't there's a carpool lane. But even though for decades there's been that message of carpool together, a lot of people just don't want to do that. Now, there are a couple of different reasons for that. One is people don't want to be without their cars. We have an earthquake. You want to have your car. I mean, that really is a fundamental thought in my mind. I mean, I think about that. So as much as I I'm not giving an excuse for why I'm not taking public transit. The excuse for the reason I'm not taking public transit is it doesn't really work for me because it's not near my house. And even though it's near my work, it would take a long time, a very circuitous route to get from point A to point B. And I can get there faster in my car. But that's not always the case. Like Camille, North Hollywood to West L.A., I think it was an hour and 15 minutes or something like that. And so that really works when you have that kind of thing. And that's why having that sort of density thing where you have people living where the transit hub is really very valuable.
Absolutely.
I can say, though, as someone who did just move here, it would be helpful to know, like, when I'm to get a packet or something to let me know that these are the options, the transportation options that are in my area. Like, when we first moved, it was the 405 is over there and the 401 is right there. So it's like, okay, I guess I have to just drive.
Where's the 401?
Does that even exist? Is that a thing?
101. 101.
Oh, 101. But so, yeah, if that is something, I don't know, like just even a pamphlet, because, you know, we get a lot of papers when you first sign. So even a pamphlet that says, hey, these are the different options. You are here. Train station's right here. If I would have known when I first signed my lease that the train station was right there, that would have even made me sign even faster.
So there was no literature at your apartment complex?
Right, none at all.
That's a great idea.
So it is a good idea. Now, I'll double down on that because I've talked to you guys about this before. I really think that Camille is a good example of not knowing where to look for transportation information. You guys should really all get on the same song sheet.
Yeah, but here's my guess, and I'll turn it over to Darren. My guess is that you are paying a little bit more in rent because the transit station is there.
Is that right?
And you don't even know. Well, you probably You probably don't know what that surcharge is, but I mean, we bring value to any community where there's transit infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fact, not just here in L.A. County, but all over the country.
I did know when I first got here, I was subleasing. So that was not real. I didn't sign my own permanent lease. And I was in Van Nuys at first. And then I got a little closer. And I realized that, yeah, my rent was a little bit higher in North Hollywood. But there's a lot more stores. There's a lot more restaurants. Things are much closer. A train station is much closer. So yeah, right. I didn't mind. I like having those things nearby where I don't have to go too far. So I didn't mind paying higher in rent mm-hmm. for that area.
But I'll go back to what I was starting to say and then let you guys pick this up. But I really do think if you put all the agencies on the same web page, I just think that's a valuable thought. And the reason I say that is because it really is hard when you have six counties and you have all these mm-hmm. agencies. How are you supposed to know?
Right.
And so if you happen to have a trip that maybe is an unusual trip and you're going into another county, how are you supposed to know that yeah. Orange County's agency is called Okta?
Right.
How are you supposed to know that?
That's right.
You know, so I think if somehow you all coordinated, maybe through SCAG,
yeah.
and you did this kind of a landing page where you're all there, plus you put up information for people like Camille.
Right.
Welcome to town.
Yeah.
These are the agencies that might make a difference in your life.
That's a great
and you know what? Paper and leaflets are one thing, but we all live with the phone in our hand.
Yeah.
And so when you have it in an app or you have it on a web page, it's going to get to us faster, right? So do you have apps, though. It's not you don't have them.
Oh, yeah, we have apps.
Yeah.
I love that idea. I love that idea. I'm going to talk to our web folks when I get back. But I think it's a good convening thing
right.
for a SCAG, too.
Well, and I would add, too, you know, one of the things that we've seen transit agencies do a really good job over the last few years, which is really starting to pay dividends, is just open up their information and data. So you can go to Google, you can go to Google Maps, and you can try to identify what's the best route, and those get updated. So I think there also is a role for, you know, the public-private partnership is that the public agencies providing the data with the private sector providing maybe the best mechanism to do it so it becomes more integrated. But I think what's missing, and we're really just starting to go down that path, is are you using the same payment system? We have 60-plus transit operators in L.A. County, 110 in Southern California. While the bulk of them might be on the system that Phil runs, there's still a lot of interconnections that need to happen. And so being able to coordinate those and ensure that payment is simple and is easy, that maybe you use the same app that you're using on your Bird scooter to your Uber to your Metrolink to your Metro Rail. And I think those are the types of things is how do we open up the framework and allow all the bright, innovative transportation companies that are really making Southern California their home is maybe help us provide some answers that we might not be able to come up with ourselves.
You know, it may not be the best analogy, but imagine if in the United States you had 51 different currencies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing. And,
exactly.
And you have different ways to approach it.
Exactly.
And if you guys put your best thinking hats on and came up with through like SCAG, and you came up with some unified thing. You know, the other thing is recently our state earthquake agencies, and we did a podcast on that. It's an episode, I think maybe 45, 46, 47. But they did this exact thing. And all the agencies that have anything to do with earthquakes put themselves on this landing page. It's brand new, just recently came out. And the goal was to say, we all have a unified message.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really the thing you want, right, is a unified message. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you're competing with each other and you don't even overlap jurisdictions, really, because you deal with trains, you deal with, you know, it's just a thought.
Well,
but there are lots of ways to approach things.
And I will say there is an overarching document for Southern California, and it's called Connect SoCal. It's a long-range regional transportation plan that our organization is really our fundamental job is to do that. It certainly does not get as widely publicized as we'd like it. Those in our little circle, certainly it's a very, very important document that each one of my colleagues that are sitting on the side of me, their projects have to be in there for them to get federal money because it's demonstrating that it's meeting Clean Air Act and other sort of federal requirements on there. But I think the more we can kind of elevate that conversation about what is it the region wants to see, agreeing on what some of the demographic changes are going to be and put a plan forward, I think that's the perfect vehicle to have these conversations at a much more specific level.
Let's talk about clean air because recently I had a conversation with one of the Execs over at the American Lung Association, which came out with a study, and the study said we failed our air quality for the 19th time out of 20 years. And that's an unfortunate statement. And why is it? Well, you know what? We don't have a smog kind of problem anymore that we used to have decades ago, but we increased cars. And so 80% of that air quality problem is, according to the American Lung Association, because of our cars.
Yeah. Well, I'll comment on that. And this makes the case for folks changing behavior. It makes the case for congestion relief. It's one thing to build all of these great projects, and we're doing that. We're building rail projects. We're building bus rapid transit projects. But I think the other side of this coin is, and we haven't even talked about climate change, the other side of this coin is forcing a change in behavior. I mean, that's kind of where we are now with the urgency of climate change and all those things. We have
talk
to
about that,
this.
Too, because we haven't really talked about climate change. Yeah. I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if we transportation being 80% the culprit, if you will, in terms of, you know, bad air and all of that, we have to make it more difficult to drive. Now, granted, we are dealing with, you know, the marketing of the car, which is really, really difficult. I mean, the great commercial with Matthew McConaughey, whose hair is blowing in the wind and all of that. He's getting in the
You're
car.
You're just jealous because you don't have the hair.
Yeah, right? I've got a shaved head, you know, whatever. You know, how do we win the hearts and minds of the people to make the big pool shot like it is in the commercial and then get out and get on a rail car? These are the things that we have to do. And I think we have to force that change in behavior to save mankind.
I'm not about to sit here and say that I'm the perfect anything. But, you know, I do understand the value of making changes. I got rid of all my grass and put in low flow water and succulents, and I have the most beautiful yard I've ever seen in my life with all these pretty flowers coming up. I've got 36 solar panels on my roof. I mean, we're being asked at this point in time to consider changes that help us with conservation, that help us with energy, and I think maybe transportation falls into all of that as well.
Well, I would say it gets back to what you're talking about earlier, is who are we planning for? The region is changing. Certainly millennials have said that they care more about the environment. Social issues are a higher priority than we've ever seen. And the folks that are making decisions for the region and on these big important decisions have to think about that. It's not about what they want. You're really planning for that next generation. And that's not an easy conversation to have because everybody who's elected is elected to their constituency that serves them today. But we know about 65% of the growth in Southern California population is going to be 65 plus. And the other big significant is going to be in that younger generation. The middle portion is not a group that's growing. So those that are thinking about and making decisions right now really have to take themselves out of what do they think they want and start asking people like Camille, what do you want? What do you expect to see? And more than not, we hear that we want better access to transportation. We don't want to spend so much time commuting. Quality of life is really critical. Environmental issues are really critical. We want housing options that are affordable but yet accessible to a variety of different amenities, whether it be food, whether it be restaurants, whether it be jobs. So I think we all at this table and folks that are in the position to make these decisions have to take that step back and start to really rethink the paradigm of who are we planning for. And put that at the forefront because those are our customers. Those are our customers, and as any business, that's who we should be focused on.
Camille? Mm-hmm.
Definitely. This just makes me think of, like, the cigarette and tobacco industry, mm-hmm. too. They used almost, were millennials, whoever their marketing strategy was, it was almost like guilt. And it was like, one cigarette could cause this amount of lung cancer or this, you know. So maybe that guilt option a little bit, like 1 hour in your car means this and that could affect you in this way. And that when just now hearing about it, I'm like, oh, wow, that's true. Like all of us are in our cars and that's affecting now the air quality and then global warming. Mm-hmm. So I think it is something that our generation does care about. So if you go down that route, that could open up a lot of eyes and ears as well.
And I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that you're just trying to figure out how to do this. This has been a work in progress for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And you know, we can go back to the 60s when the first monorails were introduced that never actually happened. We can go back to the 80s when they started boring tunnels underneath Los Angeles to put in a subway. This has been going on a very long time. But as you go forward, things change. Unintended consequences occur. And we just get more cars. And so separating people from their cars has got to be the fundamental thing that you're trying to figure out. How do I do that?
Let me just add to that, because I think the difference is the urgency. Mm-hmm. When you look at the popularity of the Green New Deal and you look at all of these things, we have ice caps melting now. We have tremendously bad air. The urgency from 30 years ago, I think, is now. And there's a real sense that we must do something. And when we start learning more about the climate and all that, I think that is the difference. And the millennials saying that, hey, listen, we care about the planet. I think that's the difference as we move forward.
So maybe I'm missing something, but have you guys started to do different kind of advertising from the past, or are you still doing the same kind of advertising? Because sometimes when you do the same kind of something, it doesn't seem like there's anything new.
Yeah, so we're looking at different advertising because we need to do a better job of reaching out, as Phil and Camille have said, to making sure everyone is aware for us. So we are partnering with local universities and colleges, doing case studies. We started a guest conductor voice announcer program. So we got the Hall of Famer of the Angels to be the guest conductor on our special trains.
I mean, what about Hal Eisner? I mean, what the
hell? I would love Hal Eisner.
What the hell,
lovely.
Right?
Absolutely. Huh? What the hell? Yeah. We would love that. Yeah. We would love that. But we want to grow our constituency, and we actually need to meet people where they are and make sure we are providing a service that they want.
It's about the customer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's about the customer.
I was just going to add, and it's not about everything and everybody. I mean, Phil put it on, had it on the head. There is an urgency about it, but that doesn't mean everybody has to give up their car and everybody has to take transit. You know, the study that Phil was referring to on transit decline earlier that we did with UCLA, it says that if one person every other week took a transit ride, you would change the trajectory of transit ridership.
One person every other week?
So that's not a very high bar. Right. So I think there's a lot of room in between everybody getting on the train and everybody driving. And that kind of idea that chipping away at it, it can have a great, great impact, not only on congestion but on air quality, makes it personal that everybody can do something that has an impact.
I just want to one more thing on congestion charges, which is this notion of turning a freeway into kind of a temporary toll road during a congested time. So what that means basically is if you're going to use that freeway, you're going to pay a little bit to use it. Just like with the rideshare cars, they charge a little bit more during more congested periods,
yep,
like Uber and Lyft.
Right.
They do that too. So how much could this end up costing? Because in the study that you did, I think you're looking at like $4 a day.
Right.
But, you know, you got the 91 freeway where you've got a toll lane that used to be a carpool lane, and that can be as high as $20, you know, during a peak time. Mm-hmm. So how expensive could this get? And you know what? There are a lot of people that simply can't afford it.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. There are a lot of people that can't afford it. But there are a lot of benefits when you're bringing cars off the general purpose lanes into those lanes and paying, because you're opening up space for those that can't afford it to be in there. It can be expensive, but also doesn't have to be expensive, because it's about providing options. You're saying that there are – I can – if I'm in a hurry, I might – you know, pay an extra $10 or $20 to not miss my son's baseball game. That seems like a bargain to me at that moment, whereas other times it might seem really expensive.
But what do you say to people who say, you know what, it's double taxation? I already paid. I keep paying in this fee and that tax. Now you're going to ask me to pay more for something that's already been paid for.
Well, freeways are not free. And in fact, while taxes paid to build the freeway lane, we have not gotten the tax revenue to actually help continue to operate and maintain those roads as well. And so this is a choice that people are choosing to pay.
So I want to kind of do a kind of a wrap up. But what I want to do that is, first of all, I want to talk about something significant that each of you are experiencing. So with Metrolink, the train system, you just got this really incredible grant from the state, $1.2 billion or something. And that's so that you can take trains that tend to run longer times between arrivals and make it 30 minutes for each one so that you have more trains moving faster, getting more people from point A to point B. Do I have that right?
That's right. That's perfect. Currently, we operate generally about every hour during the rush hour periods and limited during the non-rush hour periods, and that's just not competitive enough. So this $1 billion grant from the state is a down payment on a $10 billion program to actually get us to offer more train service every 30 minutes all day long. That's so critical to actually help transform people so they have a better choice to get out of their car. And we're focused on getting that program done by the Olympics.
What is the biggest thing SCAG is doing right now?
Wow. We have a lot of big things going on. I think our biggest focus right now is on housing. And we didn't talk about it a lot in this podcast, but when you think about where people live, and Phil referred to it, it has a direct impact on how they get around, how they get to work, what kind of decisions make on. And I think over the last 30 years, we flat out haven't built enough housing in Southern California. So the 191 cities that we represent, we're certainly working and thinking through with the new governor in Sacramento. What's it going to take to really spur housing development? You know, again, it's not rocket science. We built one new house for every 1.74 new person in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s. For every new resident, for every new house, there was 4.5 residents that were added. So how do we reverse that bottleneck and think about, are we putting housing, what makes our transportation system most efficient? And I think that's the number one priority that we have.
And it's
right
interesting
now,
because one of the biggest bottlenecks in this town is the 405 freeway through the Sepulveda Pass. And why is that? Because people live in the valley, right, and then they're coming to the west side to go to work, and they have to go through this little bottleneck to get there. Yeah. And that's why it's so frustrating. I know a couple of big projects for you, Phil, will be trying to get that pass opened up, whether it's by having monorail, cars, gondolas, whatever those might be, coming down the freeway, much less expensive than a project that we were reporting on a few years ago that's still out there, and that's the idea of a tunnel under the 405, right, with a toll lane and a train. For those who want to pay, you go downstairs. For those who want it free, you take the road upstairs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we are looking at that. We're looking at the feasibility of some kind of mode of transportation through the Sepulveda Pass. But I would say the biggest thing that's on my mind is, how do we reimagine L.A. County? And we actually named our initiative just that, reimagining L.A. County, reimagining the eradication of congestion. Looking at the equity piece for everything we build. Equity meaning looking at all of these different demographics and making sure that the infrastructure that we're building is equitable to those different demographics. Our biggest challenge, I think, in this region is reducing / eradicating congestion for the benefit of climate change and the environment and all of that. And what we've said that is included in that reimagining and congestion relief and all those things is, at the end of the day, we want to bring to our board of directors the consideration that we have free transit for everyone in the county. That really will be a huge impact on getting rid of the congestion and the pollution that we are experiencing in this county.
So just to not let that just kind of fly by, the congestion fees or charges or tax, however you want to refer to those things, that would amass a lot of money, you would take that money and use it to bring either down the prices or to try to make transportation free in Southern California.
That is correct.
That's a big deal.
It's the vision, I think, that we should have. I think it kills one bird with two stones. Or wait a minute, two stones with one bird,
two
something
birds.
Like that.
Something like that.
Two birds with one stone.
What do we say? What the hell?
What the hell?
What the hell? But I think if we're serious about this thing, right, if we're serious about addressing climate change, if we are serious about eradicating congestion, I can think of no better vision and no better way to do it than what I just described.
Camille, last word. You got it.
I'm excited. I'm excited for the changes. I'm excited to do my part and continue taking public transit. I think it's good. There's a lot of great points made today. So I hope it falls on like some good ears. I hope we all do our part to try to make lessen our carbon footprint on the world.
Thanks for joining us for this podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.